The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 7 a.m., April 25th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show. That was the Women's March Gospel Choir. Hello. Thank you for listening to K Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm Kelly the Voice. We have a ton to get to, as always, so.
Oh, from the bowels of the earth, doomed to return again. And again, hell-bent to torment the masses and drag millions into untimely graves. The zombie welfare bill has returned! Risen once again from the grave by its ponderous necromancer, known to some as the Turtle. To others, as Mitch McConnell. But whatever he be called, make no mistake, he is the harbinger of death.
It's back. The goddamn bill is back. Well, kind of. McCain is flying straight from being diagnosed with an aggressive kind of cancer to provide the vote needed on Tuesday to strip over 20 million Americans of their healthcare, so should they receive the same diagnosis, they would not have the same access to healthcare anymore, condemning them to a certain death. The cretins don't even know what the hell they're voting on. As John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, the number two Senate Republican, said on Thursday, knowing what the Republican health care bill will be before a procedural vote is a, quote, luxury that we don't have, unquote. According to the New York Times, after months of planning, debating, and legislating, much of it behind closed doors, the Senate this week has reached a moment when votes will have to be cast. The big question is what exactly the Senate will be voting on. In the meantime, the resistance has not let up. On Monday, 7,150 Catholic nuns signed a letter to our Republican senators urging them to just say no to the Turtle's wealthcare efforts. Quote, "The mission of the Catholic Sisters has always been to serve our nation's most vulnerable people. As such, we are united in opposition to the current Republican healthcare proposals. Since this letter was circulated, Senate leadership has repeatedly changed the course from the BCRA to a repeal of the Affordable Care Act without a replacement to amendments from bills from 2015. This is not good governance. As Catholic Sisters, we stand by our belief that healthcare is a universal right and urge senators to vote no on the motion to proceed for any bill that would repeal the ACA and would cut Medicaid." Unquote. Don't let up. Keep resisting. Senator Rob Portman, Republican from Ohio, one of the lawmakers who came out against the Republican plan to repeal Obamacare without replacing it, told Vox, quote, "I think the concern of citizens generally has made an impact on me, yeah. You have the protesters on the other side. Those voices are heard, absolutely." Unquote. While the conservatives are trying to hurt the poor, the sick, and the elderly citizens of America, House Democrats are pushing in the total opposite direction. As of Thursday, on record, 104 congresspeople have signed on to co-sponsor a Medicare for All bill, H.R. 676, known as the Expand and Improve Medicare for All Act, which has been introduced into Congress repeatedly by Representative John Conyers, Democrat from Michigan. Buoyed by activist support, it has now received support from more than half of the Democratic caucus, a record for the party. And if anyone has doubts that personal stories and comments at town halls did not have an effect on legislators, check this out. Representative Conyers described a critical moment in one of those town halls and the impact it had in an op-ed for the Detroit Free Press earlier this month. Quote, One of the most poignant moments came at a town hall hosted by U.S. Representative Dianne Black, Republican of Tennessee, where a constituent explained her opposition to the GOP bill using faith. As a Christian, she said, her faith was rooted in helping the unfortunate, not cutting taxes on the rich, so why not expand Medicaid and allow everyone to have insurance? And she's not alone. Last week, a Quinnipiac survey found that voters overwhelmingly oppose cuts to Medicaid, 74% of them, including 54% among Republicans. Given the record high support for publicly funded healthcare, economists, public policy experts, and commentators everywhere have called on the Democratic Party to build our momentum by supporting a single-payer system. But perhaps the most convincing case I have heard came from Jesse Bowen, a teacher from Cookeville, Tennessee, who spoke at Representative Black's town hall. The week after her question went viral, she wrote to the Washington Post that she was troubled to see her comments used as a defense for Obamacare instead of what they were, an indictment of any healthcare policy that leaves anyone out. As Bowen so eloquently put it, it is immoral for healthcare to be a for-profit enterprise that allows insurance companies to make enormous sums of money off the sick while people are struggling to pay their medical bills. If she had to do it over again, she wrote, she would have explained to Black the Christian case for universal single-payer health insurance, which would protect all Americans. Her message was targeted at Republicans, but it is one so many of my colleagues in the Democratic Party need to hear as well. Unquote. I'm an atheist, but for what I know of at least what Jesus taught, she's right. It does seem, however, as though our conservative legislators are more into the Old Testament.
Medicare for all, we shall not be moved. Medicare for all, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water, we shall not be moved.
On Monday, activists across the country set out to target Democratic lawmakers who have yet to sign off on Conyers' Medicaid for All legislation, which was part of a growing call for America to do for its citizens what literally every other developed nation in the world has done for decades.
We shall not be moved.
Okay. Moving on to stuff our government is doing that will piss us off. On Tuesday, the House is voting on House Joint Resolution 111, providing for congressional disapproval under Chapter 8 of Title 5 U.S. States Code of the rule submitted by the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection relating to arbitration agreements. This resolution would overturn Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's arbitration agreements rule that prohibits financial firms from requiring users of credit services to sign mandatory arbitration agreements that preclude them from filing class action lawsuits.
They are screwing their customers.
Once again, the Republicans are choosing banks over people and restricting our rights to a jury in an effort to undermine consumer rights that were enhanced by the CFPB's, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's, arbitration agreement rule.
You suck.
Consumers should have access to class action lawsuits and the court system to resolve disputes with banks. Regulations are protections. Say it with me. Regulations are protections. Good job. On Wednesday, the House will vote on H.R. 3219. This bill, known as the Make America Secure Appropriations Act, is a $788 billion spending package.
This is freaking nuts.
It combines four of the 12 annual appropriations bills into one piece of legislation, including funding the Department of Defense, DOD, Military and Veterans Affairs, Energy and Water Development, and the legislative branch. The funding totals for each section of the bill would be as follows. $88.8 billion for military construction and veterans affairs, $3.58 billion for legislative branch only, $3.58 billion for the legislative branch only, $37.56 billion for energy and water development, and $658.1 billion for the DOD.
This is outrageous.
What kind of paranoia are these Republicans stricken with? To lump these together and then practically abandon energy and water in order to further bloat our already obese defense budget is disgusting. But I suppose the Republicans are not afraid of being embarrassingly neglectful and ridiculous. These bills should be considered individually. But that's my opinion. lest we think the House the only ones up to no good, so is the Senate. We have a new Deputy of Interior Secretary. David Moose Killer Bernhardt, a Colorado native who likes to pose with dead animals, served in the Interior Department during the George W. Bush administration and then led the Natural Resource Law Division at the D.C. law firm of Brownstein, Hyatt, and Farber Schreck. In other words, he lobbied for the oil and gas companies. He will be second in command at the department that is responsible for much of the country's natural resources and millions of acres of federal lands. Our Secretary of the Interior, a man who likes his polar bears crispy, Ryan Zinke, has become one of the administration's most active officials, spearheading efforts to review national monument designations, screw Native Americans and future generations to open up massive swaths of sea to offshore drilling, free federal land for oil and gas and coal exploration, and oversee a monumental effort to repair the nation's national parks. Bernhardt will be right at home playing a key role in such efforts. According to the Los Angeles Times, his firm has personally sued the Department of the Interior 4 times, and Bernhardt personally argued 1 appeals case challenging endangered species protections for imperiled California salmon. So, great. Just great.
Doing a bang-up job, guys.
Although perjury and obstruction of justice are serious federal crimes, some have suggested that they are not high crimes or misdemeanors. When the underlying events concern the president's private actions. Under this theory, a president's obstruction and perjury must involve concealment of official actions. This interpretation does not appear in the Constitution itself.
Moreover, Republican corrupt, underhanded, and dirty partisanship of the 90s? Is coming around to bite him in the ass. Bill Clinton's thing for the ladies and the Repub's epic failed attempt to get him out of office. Well, buried deep in the documents of the time is a very special memo. The source? The odious Kenneth Starr. This 56-page memo, locked in the National Archives for nearly 2 decades and obtained by the New York Times under the Freedom of Information Act, amounts to the most thorough government-commissioned analysis rejecting a generally held view that presidents are immune to prosecution while in office. Quote, "It is proper, constitutional, and legal for a federal grand jury to indict a sitting president for serious criminal acts that are not part of and are contrary to the president's official duties." Unquote. He points out that Watergate special counsel Leon Jaworski also had determined in 1974 that Richard Nixon could be indicted.
You win!
On the other hand,
you suck!
In 1973, a brief by Solicitor General Robert H. Bork inferred that the Constitution makes presidents immune from indictment and trial. This was backed up decades later in a 2000 memo by Randolph D. Moss, the head of the Office of Legal Counsel under Clinton. This decision ultimately will probably come down to the Supreme Court, and now that we have Donald's hand-picked Heritage Foundation-backed Neil, he man woman hating Gorsuch on the bench, we shouldn't be getting our hopes up too high. Our country is in trouble. The very foundations of our republic are under a strain that threatened to bring the whole thing down. The ruling majority in our state and national governments are doing all they can to reduce the system our country was built on to rubble, and with it, us. They are those that seek to undermine our democracy, what little of our democracy was even left to us after gerrymandering and, in my opinion, an undemocratic electoral college. Those who have passed laws to suppress and intimidate the vote, disenfranchise the people based on race, class, and party. Those that would choose party before people, deny the process and even the law because no one has the power to hold them to account. Those that would seek power above all else in a quest for autocracy, oligarchy, and dictatorship. Those that have borrowed, cheated, and stolen their way into power and will stop at nothing to seize more and more and more with an opposing party weakened and displaced. It is left to the people to hold the line, support the system, and push back on corruption with disruption and resist. When they rise, we rise. When they overstep, we push them back. When they suppress, we repress. When they depress, what do? Stand up, fight back. When voting rights are under attack, what do? Stand up, fight back. When America is under attack, what do? Stand up, fight back.
Stand up, fight back.
We look to our leaders, we listen to our heroes, but we fight for ourselves. We fight to say we did while we could, not because we had no choice, but because we chose the harder way.
This is what democracy looks like!
A new Pew Research poll found that since the inauguration, Americans, particularly women, have become more engaged in the political system, contacting elected officials, attending demonstrations, and even paying more attention to political news. 58% of women reported that they have become more engaged in politics since
Donald cheated his way into office,
and 46% of men. 15% of total respondents said that they have attended a political event or protested since the election, and more than two-thirds of this group said that they've attended anti-Trump events. And as our oligarch threatens to fire the man who holds the law in one hand and the fate of our country in the other, Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, the resistance is readying itself for action. If history is prelude, his actions are foretold. Richard M. Nixon, who forced the resignation of both his attorney general and his deputy attorney general before he found the Justice Department lackey Robert Bork willing to fire Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox. Tricky Dick was constrained by the opposing party in power. We do not have that luxury. If that should happen, if our oligarch issues pardons, resistance groups have been coordinating their efforts and are going to be ready to take up the issue to the country and to the Congress. Resistance groups are ready to take to the streets in an explosion of people power. We can look to Democracy 21, a government watchdog group, to track Republicans who are on the record for opposing Mueller's ousting. The challenge, the true fight, will be in maintaining that power. And then, as Lisa Gilbert, Vice President of Legislative Affairs at Public Citizen, told Slate, quote, "If Congress does nothing, that means the pressure ratchets up more in response. We are hoping to do everything we can to make that possible." Looking back to Nixon, there was a moment when it became too much and the pressure had to be relieved and Congress had to act. Similarly to the special counsel being appointed in the first place in this situation. We wouldn't have thought that the Trump administration would do that, but they had to do something. In every situation, there is a moment when it is just too much. Unquote. Remember, Erica Chenoweth, co-author of Why Civil Resistance Works, The Strategic Logic of Nonviolent Conflict, reminds us that historical studies suggest that it takes just 3.5% of a population engaged in sustained nonviolent resistance to topple brutal dictatorships. And if that can be true in Chile under Pinochet and in Siberia under Milosevic, a few million Americans could prevent their elected government from unchecked corruption, from adopting inhumane, unfair, destructive, or oppressive policies. A country that was once a vanguard for democratic change has steadily moved towards light authoritarianism and strident nationalism under the conservative Law and Justice Party, which has systematically dismantled much of that progress. And no, I'm not talking about the United States. I'm talking about Poland, who is experiencing what we are and then some. Since assuming power 20 months ago, the Law and Justice Party has drawn criticism from European Union officials and political opponents for a series of initiatives that, step by step, have placed formerly independent institutions more firmly under their political control. Sound familiar? One of the last bastions of independence in Poland is the judicial system, and recently it came under threat as well. Weeks after our oligarch, Donald, hailed Poland for its democratic values during a foreign policy speech in Warsaw, tens of thousands of people took to the streets to protest the erosion of the judiciary's independence. See, this past Thursday, lawmakers in the lower house of parliament passed a draft bill that would, one, force the resignation of all Supreme Court justices with their replacements to be selected by the Justice Minister, and two, give government-appointed members effective veto power in the National Council of the Judiciary, which selects judicial candidates. And the people protested day and night. Tens of thousands, they would not let up. Hope of stopping this attack on democracy seems absent. It is not in Parliament. Poland's opposition parties lack the majority to block the legislation by the Law and Justice Party, and there isn't a unifying political figure to counter the party's clout. All that's left is people power. Recent polls suggest that 70% of the people oppose a political judiciary, and the Law and Justice Party may be the country's most popular party, but they only won by a slim margin in 2015. Sound familiar? They have a majority in both houses. Regardless, the people resisted. They protested and they made their voices heard. The bills hit the president's desk on Monday. And on Monday, bucking the party and bucking his own established behavior, he vetoed the bill. Vetoed it! The resistance stood up and their efforts worked. And so will ours. As our own controlling conservative party strips the people of their voting rights and our president uses our own tax dollars against us in his quest to have the biggest voting numbers of all time, there are those that are fighting back. The ACLU is suing the President Commission on Election Integrity, Donald's voter suppression vehicle, for operating behind closed doors, as it violates the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which was enacted in 1972. And mandates that federal advisory committees have open meetings, chartering public involvement and reporting. As for voting ID laws, here's Wisconsin Congressman Glenn Grothman before the 2016 election.
You know that a lot of Republicans since 1984 in the presidential races have not been able to win in Wisconsin. Why would it be any different for a Ted Cruz or a Donald Trump?
Well, I think Hillary Clinton is about the weakest candidate the Democrats have ever put up. And now we have photo ID, and I think photo ID is going to make a little bit of a difference as well.
Wisconsin passed a law that limits the forms of identification accepted for individuals to cast a ballot, and that is considered to be one of the strictest in the nation. An estimated 300,000 registered voters in Wisconsin, 9% of the electorate, were considered at risk of being disenfranchised. Donald won Wisconsin by 22,748 votes. Since the election, even more laws and states have popped up. Civil rights icon Representative John Lewis, Democrat from Georgia, and Alabama Representative Terry Sewell Thursday introduced a bill that would restore voting rights protections struck down by the Supreme Court in an effort to block some states' efforts to impose tougher new voter registration laws. Here's John Lewis.
We've come a distance. We made some progress. But there are forces in America today that want to take us back. And we're not going back, we're going forward. Yeah. We're going forward. So I've said many times to the young people back in Georgia and around America that when you see something that is not right, yes, not fair, not just, you have to stand up, speak up, speak out, and get in trouble. Good trouble, necessary trouble. Yes. That's why we need to restore the vote.
Nearly all of the 193 House Democrats have signed on to the legislation. I don't know what the hell is wrong with those who haven't. The Voting Rights Advancement Act is a response to a four-year-old Supreme Court ruling by Shelby v. Holder. The court struck down two key provisions of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which put 13 states under strict rule not to change their voter laws without federal approval, and set a formula for determining which states would be subject to law. The High Court said the 41-year-old formula was so out of date that it was unconstitutional. The new bill creates a new formula, but puts the 13 states back under federal authority for any voting changes. Sewell said, quote, "We're not going to have Alabama penalized for what happened in the 1960s. Our bill examines the last 25 years, 1990 to present, as a way to put a modern-day formula to the enforcement of voting rights," unquote. In addition to creating a new formula and listing states that need federal supervision, the measure would require states with repeated and persistent violations of voting rights to be subject to federal oversight for 10 years. It would also review state laws that require photo IDs to vote and that reduce multilingual voting materials. The bill also would allow federal courts to intervene in an event questionable voting practices were employed. We know this won't pass, but come 2018, should we find a way, despite gerrymandering, despite voter suppression, and despite voter disenfranchisement, to take back the House, this could become law, and we could restore some of our democracy.
Wall Street's worst day since 9/11. The Dow plunging more than 500 points. The S&P down almost 5%. The wreckage unprecedented.
We had a sharp sell-off in stocks on Wall Street today.
Lehman bankrupt.
When Scott Soffhanz Walker got elected to be governor of Wisconsin, he used the state budget crisis to strip the hardworking laborers of union bargaining rights in 2011, catapulting him to the prettiest girl at the Republican ball. The only man in America to follow God's rule about not touching himself, Mike Pence, met with Scotty just after the 2016 election to hear from the Republican hero exactly how it was he screwed over the voters. The Republicans, and now Donald, are already working to get Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP benefits. Well, any social program that helps the people. But they are constrained from doing so completely. After the 2008 crisis, banks were never broken up. And now the Republicans are giving a green light to banks to bubble their way to another market crash with dismantling of the already decimated Dodd-Frank and the onslaught of deregulation. The bubble that we were already heading towards will once again burst. And Donald's banking buddies will not be on the hook.
We will.
Naomi Klein, author of The Shock Doctrine, explains that it will not be in the first year after the new crisis, the new shock, that we start seeing their truly insidious economic plans be realized, but it will be when the new budgets are made to recover from the crisis. Quote, then in the name of rescuing the government and perhaps the entire economy, the White House will start checking off the more challenging items on the corporate wish list. Unquote. Social programs? Gone. DeVos's charter school and voucher programs? In. Minimum wage? Gone. Or at least slashed. Tax hikes for the poor? Of course. Tax hikes for the rich? How big? For big business? Better believe it. Whatever the shock we inevitably face, be it economic, environmental, war, terror attack, or multiples thereof, we know one thing is certain. It will be used as an opportunity to enact the extreme and barbaric agenda of Donald, his administration, and unfortunately the Republicans in the House and Senate as well. In prior episodes, Naomi Klein explains that in order to resist such an agenda, we need to, one, know what is coming, and two, get out of our homes and defy the bans, disobey en masse. Step three, know our history. Know history in general. How have other countries and ourselves divided power grabs in the past? And here is step four.
Something else we know from history. Step four, always follow the money. While everyone is focused on security and civil liberties, Trump's cabinet of billionaires will try to quietly push through even more extreme measures to enrich themselves and their class, like dismantling Social Security or auctioning off major pieces of government for profit.
Today we're proposing to take American air travel into the future.
It's in those moments when fear and chaos are sucking up all the oxygen when we most have to ask whose interests are being served by the chaos. What is being slipped through while we're distracted? Who's getting richer? And who's getting even poorer?
When the floodwaters were still rising in New Orleans, one of the first official acts that the governor did was to fire all the teachers. What's happening is a raid of the money set aside for public education to be given to private companies. It wasn't by happenstance. It was by design. You saw the political manipulations and taking advantage of the crisis.
But if we learn from this history, we could actually make history with step five.
In Friday's episode, we will go over step five. In the meantime, we resist. We take what we have and we do what we can. Whatever tickles our thighs. As a fellow activist this weekend put it, where is our activism bliss? Find what inspires you to act and take action. Be it small, be it big, it doesn't matter. Now's the time. Now's the time for us to do what we can, where we can, and how we can. Okay, I gotta go. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, that is one word, C-R-A-B-D-I-V-I-N-G, under the K-Voice tab. You can also download my show as a podcast, wherever it is you get your podcast. You can also find my show at Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice and on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. Take care of yourselves out there, and as always, resist.
Resist!